Hello, welcome back to The Love Note. My name is Lucy Bloomfield, and as always, I am your host. Today is episode 32, and as you know, I'm currently running a series called The Power of Your People. And this series focuses on sharing the lessons and wisdom of the people around me who have helped me to become the person that I am today. This is the fifth episode in the series, and today I'm interviewing Debbie. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Thank you, Lucy. I feel very honored to be here.
I haven't told anyone about you before because I wanted to respect your privacy, but I'm really excited to introduce you today. And the first question I wanted to ask you is, who are you and what's your relationship with me?
My name is Debbie, and I am fortunate to be your niece.
No, I'm your niece.
I do feel I'm very, very lucky. And what's my relationship with you? Well, I think in our adulthood, we have a very strong connection. I adore you. I think you're wonderful. And it seems to me that our relationship is greater and deeper than this lifetime alone. Through our sharing and our relationship developing, I have found that often there's an alignment with our experiences and our growth. It's not the same situations that come up, but somehow because of our really beautiful and magical communications, I can see that there's something. It's quite hard to describe, but there's definitely, I guess alignment is the word. There's often a shared experience where I can see through what you're sharing with me and then what I'm sharing with you later on. If it's not clear then, later on it becomes very clear that it must be something that underlies the strength and of our relationship. I do feel that you're my soul sister. You're not just my niece. You're not somebody that I know, just a member of my family. But we've met before, and I do honestly think that we'll probably cross paths again outside of this particular life.
You're very special to me too. When I was going through a rough breakup, you taught me so much about loving myself and being kind to myself, and I wanted to use this podcast as an episode, a way to say thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And specifically, you told me to do mirror work, and I was hoping that you could tell my listeners what mirror work is and some of the different ways that you can use it.
Mirror work is something I used to rediscover the love for myself. I don't recall exactly, but I think I may have started mirror work on the advice of my sister. I was healing after a 16-year controlling and abusive relationship. And with the freedom of a few months off work, I was able to dance to my own tune each day with twice daily stillness meditations, an organic diet and rest, true rest. I started to regain my Debbie-ness, and it was very sweet, and mirror work had a lot to do with that. To me, my understanding of mirror work is being kind and compassionate towards yourself, but taking it that step further from thoughts and meanderings of the mind to actually communicating directly to yourself in the mirror. It can be out loud, or it's just like communicating those words while looking at yourself. I think it has a far deeper and more profound effect. Look, it just became part of my day during that healing. I have this huge mirror in my bathroom. So just about every time I walked into the mirror, there was a connection with myself, whether it was a little smile or a good morning or a wink or just something, down to quite long conversations or really important things that I said to myself. It was just the best fun, and it's so easy. I'd say things like, I'm really proud of you, encouraging things, and I love the person that you are. Or just, I love you, Debbie Bloomfield, when I look at myself in the mirror various times through the day. And if I had a difficult experience, I'd reflect by looking at myself. And if it was particularly an experience, let's say, where I might have handled it differently or better, there was no punishment, you know. I would just look at myself and might be, well, that might have gone differently. And then I'd say, good on you for noticing. It was always encouraging and gentle. Yeah, it could have been like, right, okay, well, perhaps next time you can consider something else or count to 10 or walk away. It really doesn't matter. It was allowing myself to be my natural self. There was an acceptance of my responses or reactions, as may be, to situations. Honestly, mirror work, it was the most beautiful experience I have ever had. Rekindling love for myself. True, unconditional love. I feel it made me no longer needy for anything from anybody else. And if I was able to express, regardless of what had happened, genuine love for myself, unconditional love, then it was something I would be more, I was freely able to give to other people around. If I could feel compassion for myself, I could be compassionate more naturally. Look, I remember a particular mirror conversation or an insight I had. One particular really beautiful defining moment for me through mirror work was an acknowledgement that my very difficult childhood and this abusive relationship I had come out of had given me very deep hurts, very deep harmful experiences. My sister calls them scratches. And I said to myself, I have had some very deep scratches. And some of these scratches run so, so deep. And yet, like a beautiful piece of etched jewelry, these scratches could never be erased. But they actually have become part of my unique design. And that's what mirror work did for me. It showed me all of myself in all of my experiences, and that I really liked the person that I was today and that I am today. And that's what I think I loved it the most. I no longer really need to do intensive mirror work, but it's always there. I'll often walk in and just say good morning, or I really love you, or whatever it is. So it's still a part of my day, and it's just so easy.
It's definitely been something, since you told me about it, something that I've continued to do, although maybe not as consistently now that I'm past the hump of learning how to love myself. But once you have it there as a tool, it's really easy to lean back on it when you need it. And I'm grateful that you showed me it.
I'm so pleased to be able to share it. For me, it so gently and profoundly brought kindness, self-love and compassion back into my daily reality.
You've also talked to me before about doing shadow work, and I was hoping you could tell my listeners what it is and how you've used it.
The way I understand shadow work is a mechanism of allowance and acceptance to bring you back to your natural, most authentic self, to remove conditioning that begins when you're a child. It's like, as a child, to be polite is good and you're rewarded. To be rude is naughty and will invite punishment, as an example. My friend, a beautiful friend of mine, Beck, when I'd share an experience with her, she would have a download or an insight, and she would suggest maybe some shadow work on this. And so I looked at it, and I guess it's, let's say it might be a trigger word or a trigger behavior. A good example could be you're stubborn, and that has a negative connotation, and yet to be determined is a very similar thing and is something to be rewarded or to feel good about yourself if you're determined. But stubborn looks like you just don't budge. It's, I don't know. What I would do to begin with shadow work is I would look at a type of behavior that I'd felt had come out of an experience, that I had a deep reaction to it. It could be someone else's behavior or it could be mine. And I could have gone home and punished myself for whatever the behavior was, mentally punished myself. So Beck taught me to sit and look at all of the positives to that apparent negative behavior. And there are always positives. Believe you me, you can choose violence. You can choose rudeness. You can be stingy or miserly. You can be selfish. It could be any word that you could possibly, or behavior you could possibly think of. There will be benefits to it. And it can be a really fun thing to do. And then another friend loaned me a CD, a DVD, that was called The Shadow Effect by Debbie Ford. And that gave me real clarity. The way Debbie Ford described shadow work was, in an experience, if somebody has a certain behavior, and you just shrug your shoulders and go, that was a bit rude, there's no need for that, no problem. But if their behavior is, you're left with it, you have a really strong reaction, you feel hurt, you keep thinking about it, it just keeps playing around in your head, this is something to do shadow work on. Generally, the behavior or actions of another person is projecting onto you something that you need to explore more deeply within yourself. So it's something that you're not allowing yourself to do. So when someone else is doing it, you kind of take this moral high ground, like, well, I would never be, you know, like that towards somebody else. There's a judgment there. It's the opposite of compassion, is a judgment. And so when you look at it more deeply and you allow yourself to actually be anything, behave in any particular way, in any particular circumstance, when it's appropriate, you remove the mental punishment of having behaved in that way. So, look, the fun thing can be like, okay, so let's take being rude. No, it's not okay to walk around and be rude to everybody around you. Well, it could be for some, but it's probably not going to help you in your daily life. But there are times when being rude or abrupt to someone is the thing to do in that particular moment. And when we do shadow work, we actually remove all of these conditionings that we've placed on ourselves or society placed on us or that have been with us from childhood. The beautiful thing about shadow work is it brings you back to your authentic self. To cheat or something doesn't mean that it needs to define you in your whole entire being. Let's take violence as a classic example. I wouldn't want to walk around life beating people up and using violence as a way to resolve every conflict that I may experience. And yet, there will be times when a violent reaction in a dangerous situation may just save your life or the life of another person. And by removing, through shadow work, by removing the conditioning and the underlying punishment, we actually allow our instincts to guide us always for our greater good.
One of the parts I love most about you is your habit of reflection and practicing gratitude. And out of all the things that you've given to me, this is the one habit that I have never let go of and held onto really tightly. So could you tell my listeners more about what you do to practice gratitude and make time for reflection?
Okay. I had to learn gratitude, and I also learnt to reflect. It didn't come naturally to me. I was a big blamer.
And that sounds familiar.
Didn't know how to cheer myself up for a long time. In fact, if I felt really sad, I would just spiral and think of all the reasons why I really didn't feel bad until I basically hit rock bottom and then the only way was up. So it was incredibly tiring, exhausting and damaging. And at some point, it just happened. I was going to have a sad day. I knew it was my birthday. And I had a good talk to myself and basically said, look, everyone has a bad birthday. It could be bad weather or just sickness or any manner of things that would mean you'd possibly have the non-perfect birthday. So I just made a decision that day that I knew I was going to be sad and I would allow myself to be sad, but I didn't want to dwell there for long. And I would look around and find something that made me smile or made me feel good. And I did shed tears that day. And then I'd look up to the sky or see a butterfly or realize I was at the river, one of my most favorite places to be. Or I'd look at my dog. And it started an incredible change in me that has been the best thing for me. These days, I tend to, if I'm complaining or I'm not happy about a situation and I'm looking at someone else and blaming them for their behavior, I ask myself, am I also behaving like that? Or what's my role in this situation? And it basically turns the focus off an outward blame and back to yourself. And it starts questions. Even if you can't answer those questions, as soon as you ask a question and give it up to the universe, and walk away and give it some peace and some time, the answer or some clarity or some growth will come from it. But mainly it helps me to take responsibility for my own behavior, my own energy in any given situation. It turns the focus back on me. Perhaps this person's behavior or that person alone may be the most unlikely teacher to teach me how I don't wish to treat other people. It could be an opportunity for growth, for insight. Often for me, it's boundaries. It helps me to recognize if I don't have a clear boundary, if I haven't expressed that clear boundary, if that person is knowingly crossing my boundaries, and if I need to have some clarity on how to either reassert that boundary or if I'm contributing to the whole situation. There have been times where I do, it can take me a while to recognize this. I could spend some time in the blame circle and then I kind of just stop. Okay, all right. Let's have a think about this. And I kind of laugh with myself. I always bring laughter and lightness into it. And do you think you might be part of the problem? And it's really fun. It can be just, I don't know, keep it light. It doesn't have to be heavy. As soon as you ask yourself a question like that, laugh, go play in the garden, go for a walk, swim, dance, sing, whatever it is. But at some point, clarity will come. And sometimes that clarity is that there is no excuse for the other person's bad behavior. There may be nothing you can do about the situation except choose your own response to it. It could be that the person's gaslighting you. I've had a recent experience with that in a workplace where I honestly feel there was gaslighting going on. I don't know, I think it's just about, you know, they say it's a law of attraction. Am I attracting this in some way? Am I allowing it? Am I contributing? And once we start looking at those sorts of things, you do find that, again, it might get back to shadow work. If a particular situation, a person's behaviour is having a strong effect on you, is it actually their behaviour, or is there something that you can grow and learn and move on from out of this experience?
I like that. When you have a bad day, do you have any specific routines that you fall back on to alter your perspective?
Okay. Well, I don't have a routine. I'm not very good at sticking to routines. It's one of my growth opportunities. But I do have a lot of different tools and options. I play with my dog. I come home and I like trees, so I look around at the trees. You can go gardening. Take your shoes off and put your feet on the ground. Feel the earth, feel the grass. I go to the river. I love the river. We've got beautiful freshwater creeks around here. And once you actually look outside of yourself at the reality of the world around you and celebrate the incredible beauty in its simplicity and intricacies, it's pretty hard to stay in a sad space. You can still feel sad, but you don't need to wallow it. It allows you to be sad and to hold your sadness or to hold your anger or whatever it might be. But it also allows you to be other things at the same time. I love the garden. I love nature. But really, you could sit in a car and look at a park or a random tree and invite nature and beauty into your day at any given moment. So for me, I think I just try and be fairly natural about it these days. And when I find myself in a cycle of complaining or blaming, then I have simply done a gratitude exercise where I sat down each day, put 5 minutes aside to express and seek gratitude. And the things that I have become grateful for have ranged from friends to love to wind to trees to light to beer to music. It's everything. And when you explore these things, it's so much fun, you know. So, no, not a routine, but I try to be a little bit more natural about finding a quick way to get myself out of a cycle of self-pity.
Okay.
Overall, I find that when I'm able to breathe and reflect and ask simple questions of myself, my instincts will tell me if there is something wrong, if there's something I need to recognize out of that experience or that relationship. But ultimately, clarity comes. It removes emotions, and the path forward to resolving the matter, or at worst, a plan to deal with the situation arises. And then there's this sigh. It's like compassion for the other. And not true blame. I can readjust my energy to the situation and the path again becomes clear. It's like you just turned the light on and the dark mood and the dark energy fades away and everything becomes light and clear and quite simple again.
That's beautiful. You've had one relationship that was particularly tumultuous, and I wanted to ask you, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned about relationships?
Okay. One of the biggest lessons I've learned about relationships and myself is how kind and essential boundaries are. It helps you to understand, it helps me to understand myself, my needs, my changing self. And it also makes it a healthy space for your loved ones to understand what's okay with you and what isn't, because we're all so different. When your boundaries are really strong, and this is not my thing, I heard it once, I don't remember who said it, but when your boundaries are strong and they're clear, when somebody behaves in a manner that crosses those boundaries, it's a far more natural, compassionate response to assert that boundary or to state it as that's not okay by me. There's no anger, there's no hurt. It removes a judgment that that person's behavior is like, oh, how dare they, or whatever. It just removes that, and it just is such a gentle and simple way of explaining who you are and how you wish to be treated. So for me, boundaries, they're going to change. They may broaden, they may narrow. We all grow and change. But in a relationship, on any level, professional, personal, loving, intimate, family relationships, people who don't respect your boundaries, when you're able to express them and reassert them, have their own issues. Within an intimate relationship, for a person to ask you or pressure you or to change your boundaries or to question them, challenge them constantly, that you need to defend them or that you find you're compromising them for the benefit of the other, I think this is not healthy. And if there's a benefit to the other person, then we really need to ask, not necessarily what that benefit is, but do they respect us on a deeper level? This is one of the strongest lessons I've learned from difficult relationships, and it's something that continues to come up in my life often at the moment. So I'm working on it, and it's a really nice journey.
Boundaries are fun. I remember the first time I let people know that I had boundaries, and because I'd never protected myself before or stood up for myself, it used to come out in rage and like, don't do that. And now it's a lot calmer with practice, but it's difficult the first few times.
It's so true. I had the same experience. I felt like I was a really vicious dog on the edge of my fence, kind of barking like, you better get back. And then finally, when I felt more comfortable about actually understanding my boundaries and expressing them, it slowly became more gentle. It wasn't such a conflict, but it's true. In learning to even feel confident to state a boundary, It's a really big lesson to learn. There's no doubt about it. I was very violent in the beginning. How dare you? Really strong. And they look at you like you're crazy, because you are, because you have such an extreme response to a boundary being crossed, and you didn't know it was a boundary in the first place.
What would you say is a healthy relationship then?
Look, I noticed with myself that when I became spiritually and emotionally self-sufficient, I was able to recognize healthy relationships. And unhealthy ones, which I was quite okay with at the time. Not that they were long term, they weren't going to be long term, but it might have been, you know, just someone I'd see from time to time, and maybe they weren't fully respecting me on every level, but I quite enjoyed their company from time to time, and it was okay because I didn't need acceptance or love or anything from that person. So coming to a self, a balance where I wasn't really needy, I didn't play games, I didn't suck energy from people when I didn't have enough energy of my own. When I felt like I needed company, I wasn't lonely, I just quite wouldn't have minded some company. So I'd visit a friend, or I'd go downtown, or just be around people. And that's not to say that independence is not interdependence. You move from being dependent into independence, and then the next step is being interdependent, where you do allow people to help you. You recognize the value they bring to your life. You recognize and adore what you bring to the life of others. And once you remove the neediness, there's just a greater authenticity to who you are. And healthy relationships come, I think, naturally. And unhealthy ones, they're easy to feel. Your instincts tell you that even if all the boxes are ticked and everything looks good, it doesn't feel right. It allows a greater freedom and direction, ruled by your feminine side, your intellect, your instincts, and your higher intuition. And with your balance, the male part of us allows us the strength and the will to act on those sort of intuitions and that instinct. So for me, I think it's all about energy. You give unconditionally then, and you receive when people are offering it, but you don't play games for it, and you just don't need it. It's different from needing a hug, or I need to feel loved right now, or asking for something. But it's an asking and an acceptance that person may actually not be able to give what you need at that time. But it's nice to be able to ask and not demand or steal that from other people. And it leaves you safe from theft and from being vulnerable to people drawing on your energy without your consent.
What red flags are key indicators to you that someone else's relationship or your relationship isn't healthy?
Okay. A wise person once said to me, if people offer you advice or ask you for something, and there's absolutely no benefit to that person, it's probably quite an authentic request or an authentic caring piece of advice. So alternatively, if there's a true benefit to the person and they're asking for something that you're uncomfortable to give, I think that's a red flag. It's really hard to explain how I've come to trust my instincts when it comes to relationships. And I'd have to say it's probably from having an awful one and having some really terrible experiences. But through that, and through my growth, and through my self-honesty and love, an allowing and an acceptance of myself. It's just something you feel on a deep level. Something's not right. I went through a long, long period of taking responsibility for relationships that weren't working and basically taking on all of the responsibility as to what I could do and what I could do to help and things like that. And I was being terribly emotionally controlled and abused, squashed on a systematic day-to-day, 24-hour basis. So to come out of something like that, I've come to realize that some people are just wired differently. I'm not sure if they, some people can probably change and make choices, and other people, I swear they can't. Mm. They're just wired differently, and they vibrate on a completely different level. Having been exposed to that sort of an experience over quite a long time, 16 years, I just feel it. There are a few triggers that I notice. It's hard to say exactly what they are. Sometimes it's just like, I'm not sure about that person, or behaviours, like I've spoken to you about, people answering for their partner, or it's our favourite restaurant, isn't it? You know, this sort of thing. Like, why are you speaking for that person?
Mm.
So, look, I did a lot of reading. I've read some wonderful books, and more recently, some books that just came to me, and they showed me that in unhealthy relationships there are some absolute textbook maneuvers. It's quite remarkable how much the research and experience can show you. And reading these books, I just sort of go, oh my gosh, yes. And they're not things I ever thought about. They can be so subtle and so insidious that they creep in by degrees, and you don't realize how much you're compromising on a small basis until all of a sudden you look back and you don't know how you ever got where you are.
Mm.
Society's often said, why did they stay in that relationship so long? And puts the focus back on you for allowing the behavior, not realizing that the focus really needs to be put on the person who is behaving in that way. But it's a complex situation. It's very difficult. Look, some of the books, two in particular, if I can mention them, was a book called Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft. Absolutely wonderful. One of the first books I ever read about difficult and abusive relationships. And another one came to me through a friend's horrific experience. She asked me to read it so that I would understand what she'd gone through and how particular language and phrases I was using was actually diminishing the damage that was done to her. Unknowingly, I didn't realize the words were not helpful. And that was a book by Don Hennessy called How He Gets Into Her Head, The Mind of the Male Intimate Abuser. They helped me to understand the deeper levels and mechanisms at work. And once I validated my experiences in these really tiny and subtle ways, I let it go. And then at a point in time, I actually forgave people who had treated me badly throughout my life. And I felt compassion for them, because they clearly are going to not allow themselves to experience unconditional love, which is the greatest shame I could imagine a human being doing to themselves. And then I just realized that some people are different. And some people may not be able to choose a different path. So it's a vibration and an instinctual thing. And I could list all of the red flags that might come up. But quite honestly, that book by Lundy Bancroft should basically be something that every young child, male and female, reads, so that they understand if they are experiencing power in an action, power over a person, and that incredible difference and how far away that is from actually experiencing the true power within. It's different. Yeah, it's a complex thing that I've come to know, and I may not be the best judge of character, but from time to time my instincts just say, not sure about that. And as it turns out, over time I seem to be quite on the money, and other times I'm sure I might be wrong, so I just tend to ask the question, is that right? Is that healthy? Let it go. Give it up to the universe, and hopefully, unless you're being squashed or you're so tired that you can't, you know, think clearly or you need some space, hopefully the answer comes. And in that, I think that was the greatest thing I learnt from the book by Don Hennessy. If you feel you have difficulties in a relationship, or if you know anybody who you think may be in a relationship where they're spirit is being squashed, then the greatest gift you can give to yourself or to help that person is silence. And that means removing yourself from the situation for 2 to 3 weeks with no contact, no calls, no visits, nothing. And just be silent, meditate, eat, sleep, rest. When somebody doesn't have access to your mind and your emotions on a 24-hour a day, 7-day-a-week basis, the tricks stop working. And if it's not an abusive relationship, hopefully, and I would imagine, the key issues will be very clear. They will become clear, and you'll see a path ahead. And I think it's a golden gift any relationship can give to yourself, whether you do it on a constant basis and you take time out once a week or once a fortnight. But if it's difficult and you don't know what's going on, then just go away and be by yourself and sleep and rest, and then ask yourself those questions.
Could you give any advice about handling red flags, particularly if the person wants to stay in the relationship and work through it with the other person?
One thing I'll say is, if the relationship is abusive, counselling doesn't help. It never will. Because if that person is a psychopath and they are determined to have their needs met regardless of the damage it does to you or anyone else, then counselling and sharing your feelings just shows them what's working and what isn't. In a healthy relationship, red flags, I think, if it's not an abusive situation, it's probably about boundaries or about directions and dreams and wishes. I probably would deal with it in the same way that I do now with any situation that comes up where I feel hurt or damaged, or I feel like I might be blaming someone. Again, go away, have some peace and quiet, some distance, and ask yourself if you're contributing. Is your energy contributing to the conflict or the difficulty? Is the red flag something to do with a boundary that you haven't defined and that you need to discuss and to define? Or is it truly about that person's behaviour? And, you know, I guess go into the negotiations as though you have to be prepared to walk away. It's a negotiation. It's your life. It's your happiness, it's your future, and it's your growth. We often find every possible reason as to why you can't move on or you can't leave. And that's an unhealthy way to try and resolve conflict in a relationship. Because we're all individuals on our own journey. And if you give it everything you've got, everything in your heart and your soul, and just be so total in your experience with the people that enter your life. If the day comes where your paths divide and you lead in a different direction, and these are the words of Osho, to be able to look at each other and smile with true love and gratitude in your heart, and to thank that person for being a part of your journey. And now I need to go this way. You may just find that if their direction is too far different than your direction, then for the time being, whether it's today, a year, or a lifetime, you may not be together. And you've granted that person freedom to live on a higher level and to have the love they truly deserve. And maybe if you are still have time to be together, then you're able to find a way forward. Whether it's an accepting of that person and their behaviour or their what's good for them that doesn't sit well with you, then that's something that might actually save your relationship. If you're asking for something from a person that you need and they're not satisfying, can you get it somewhere else? That person is not your world, and it's not fair to ask them to satisfy every need that you have on every level, intellectual, sexual, financial, spiritual. If you're feeling needy and this person is not satisfying your needs, or you see some red flags come up, I'd first start with myself. Is it something about me? Is it my boundaries? Is it my energy? Am I asking for something that I can go and get for myself? Do I need a bigger, fuller life to let this person off the hook? Is that really a red flag? It's a hard one, because it can be, particularly if you want to stay together and you want to give it everything that you've got. Incredible things have happened in healing from deep hurt. I remember a beautiful lady I used to work with. Her husband had an affair. I remember a beautiful lady I used to work with and I'm still friends with. Her husband had an affair with his secretary, and then things got really nasty and the secretary was threatening to expose him to his wife and everything, and he came home and spoke to his wife about it. Her simple response to it was, "This is not about me. You need to go and find your own place, an apartment, and go and consider what you want out of life." And he did. She just refused to take any responsibility for his choice. But also, she didn't blame him. She didn't hate him. She was probably angry and all those other emotions. But in the end, he went away and he made a choice. And that was to stay with her. And they're still together from this day. And they're so happy and so in love. And it's a classic example, whether she had any instincts that things weren't right or he was concealing things from him or not, I don't recall. But I have never heard anything more wise come from anyone, that she just said, "This is not about me. This is your choice and these were your actions and you need to consider your consequences, but what you want." It was such a freedom she gave him. And if he'd have chosen to continue on his way, I swear she probably would still love him, because he made a choice. It was beautiful.
It is beautiful. I have a few other random questions that I like to ask every person who comes on the show. And they're quick questions, but you can take your time answering them. What book has changed the way you think about the world or yourself?
Okay. One profound book that questioned everything I believe in was Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
My favorite.
It was. Oh, it questioned all of my beliefs. Every single thing I have ever thought was right and good in the world. It was the most incredible read. It took a long time. The pages were thin and the words were small, and it was a thick book. And I don't necessarily agree with that capitalist type attitude or approach to the book, but it was just mind-blowing. I am a socialist, I think, in my way of wanting to take care of people and wanting to lift people up and things like that. But when I look at things going on in the world, that book helps me to actually see the other side and how other people think and view, particularly high-performing people, incredible minds, incredible inventors, and is it magnates? People who are powerhouses for change and action. That book at the time blew my mind, and I probably read it about 20 years ago or something like that. Probably a good time to read it again, just to see.
I loved that book so much. I think it was one of those books for me that I picked up and I could not put it down. I had Trefiel and we were doing crazy long days working on that project, but it was the only time since I started the business that I stopped working and just read for 3 days straight. It was incredible.
I can imagine.
What's something that excites you about the next 5 years of life?
Wow, the next 5 years of life, that it can only get better. That I ask myself, how good does it get? And I haven't hit best yet. It's potential. It's the potential of everything. And simplicity, which I've decided is what I'd like to work on this year. I talked to you about how I think it touches on so many things in diet, oh, just my habits, everything. Simplicity. I am really excited on what that's going to bring to the next 5 years because honestly, removing some of my complex behaviors. It's got to make life such a breeze. I'm excited about simplicity. It's going to be beautiful.
And simple. What's something that scares you?
I'm actually having difficulty finding something that scares me right now as a really natural response to the question. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of being old because I'm getting there. I wouldn't like to be unhealthy. I think that would be frightening. But if it's my journey, then possibly outside of taking good care of myself and eating a more healthy diet and getting more exercise and simplicity, then it might just be part of my journey. That's probably it. I'd be really scared to be so sick and to have to say goodbye, I think, to the beautiful people in my life and to life itself. I can't express a greater gratitude than the health that I have, my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health, and the health of my beautiful relationship, the friendships that I have, and the relationship that I have with myself. So the thought of not having that actually is quite terrifying when I come to think of it.
If there was one parting piece of advice you could give to my listeners that might change the way they think either about themselves or the world around them, what would it be?
The piece of advice I would like to offer from my experiences is keep it simple, keep it light, be kind to yourself, and always ask and wonder if this is part of your journey. I think it removes a lot of the torment. Ask a question, and that opens up your heart, it opens up our minds, it opens us up to an understanding. Ask questions. It's such a nicer way to move forward. Just leave so much room for everything. Ask a question, and then leave it. Leave it to your higher self. Give it up to the universe. It might come back to you to think about, and it might not. It just starts with a question. It's a really nice way to start a conversation with a person and with yourself and with your soul. It's really sweet.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Debbie. It's been really nice sharing this with you.
It's been a really nice experience for me. I have not been involved with a podcast before, and I couldn't think of a nicer, warmer, more accepting, loving person to do this experience or to have this experience with. Thank you so much, Lucy.
I love you.
I love you so much.
I will talk to you soon, I'm sure. Goodbye, Debbie.
Thank you. Let's go. Bye.
If there was one parting piece of advice you could give to my listeners that might change the way they think either about themselves or the world around them, what would it be?
The piece of advice I would like to offer from my experiences is keep it simple, keep it light, be kind to yourself, and always ask and wonder if this is part of your journey. I think it removes a lot of the torment. Ask a question, and that opens up your heart, it opens up our minds. It opens us up to an understanding. Ask questions. It's such a nicer way to move forward. Just leave so much room for everything. Ask a question, and then leave it. Leave it to your higher self. Give it up to the universe. It might come back to you to think about, and it might not. Just starts with a question. It's a really nice way to start a conversation with a person and with yourself and with your soul. It's really sweet.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Debbie. It's been really nice sharing this with you.
It's been a really nice experience for me. I have not been involved with a podcast before. And I couldn't think of a nicer, warmer, more accepting, loving person to do this experience or to have this experience with. Thank you so much, Lucy.
I love you.
I love you so much.
I will talk to you soon, I'm sure. Goodbye, Debbie.
Thank you. Let's go. Bye.